information. We continue to focus on our primary strategy, which is the implementation of the integrated and multidisciplinary geoscience mapping program. We have prioritized use of geoscience information that we have to identify mineral potential, mineral targets, and drill those mineral targets so that it can be part of our contribution towards resuscitating exploration in South Africa. We have working and supported by the department, the Geoscience Act regulations have been published for public comment. These are some of the immediate priorities. This work of geoscience mapping, the immediate outcomes that we are anticipating in the current year and the outer years is to improve applications of geoscience as we enhance the coverage of the mapping program, and these applications are in respect of giving effect to primarily these thematic areas: the applications of geoscience in the development of mineral and energy resources. That is our primary reason of existence. But of course, the applications of geoscience are also in respect of infrastructure development and optimal land use, groundwater and environment, innovation, as well as geoscience diplomacy. In the immediate term, Chair, we play a critical role as the Council for Geoscience, and we understand that we are not the only ones who are playing in this space, and we fully appreciate the value chain integration and the various key players in order to achieve this the target that the country has set. Our minister has given us clear marching orders that it has been unacceptable for South Africa to only capture less than 1% of the global exploration expenditure share. And in that respect, our marching orders is to contribute towards attaining a minimum of 5% in the next 3 to 5 years. And all that we do is fundamentally directed towards ensuring that exploration activities are indeed consistent with the quality of geology that we are blessed with. This slide emphasizes the various thematic areas that I've already alluded to. I will skip through that one. But this slide is, Chair, is to confirm what Dr. Mate has already reported in his opening remarks, that when we started with the geoscience mapping program, the country was covered at below 5% at the scale of 1 in 50,000. And we are systematically improving that coverage. And as at end of last year, we were at 9.03%. And it is our intention that at the end of the current administration, we would be mapping at the pace and scale that we are able to have resources to achieve that. And our target is around 16% at the end of this term. The sad reality, Chair, is that we have not mapped our geology offshore. We have absolutely no idea of the potential that the blue economy presents to this country. And so we have a program that begins to focus on mapping offshore. At the bottom there is the vessel, the CGS vessel, aptly named Research Vessel Nkosi. We also have collaboration with the Navy that we have reported. We have collaboration, we have established collaboration with the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries, so that both, instead of going and seeking to acquire another vessel, we can request collaboration and use those vessels to acquire the data that we require. We target 0.5 development into the future. This is the distribution of the various targets that we have identified. In the interest of time, Chair, I will move very quickly through that slide. I've reported at length in respect of the Molteno in the coalfields, what we continue to do in this area. We have developed the hypothesis that this that we have seen and mapped here, which is the near surface expression of the coalfields, may potentially be dipping to the north, and we have assigned two master's students and a PhD student to characterize this basin appropriately, so that when we make choices about the possibilities of developing these coal fields in line with our climate change commitments, we would know exactly what we have, so that we can make appropriate decisions based on the technical information that we have. Yeah, the reason I've put up this slide is that there are many South Africans who are saying, why are you mapping again? We have mapped this country and we have mapped at 100%. This is the one example of a rock called pegmatite, which is host a host of lithium, this pegmatite. It is a huge expression in the Northern Cape. This is the boundary with Namibia. This here, I don't know what color that is, Chair, is what we have known it to be before we started mapping. What you see at the bottom, which is an orange color, is an increment of 67% of the pegmatite, 67% that has been added as a result of the geoscience mapping program that our geoscience have their boots on the ground continue mapping and demonstrate the value that geoscience continue to have and contribute to the development of our programs. We have many of these examples. I have elected only to use this one to demonstrate the point. Here we also have applications of geoscience, as I've indicated, in groundwater resources, environmental stewardship and innovation, amongst others. And in the next couple of slides, I will give you an update on the Karoo deep drilling, the environmental baseline study in respect of shale gas development. This is progressing exceptionally well, Chair. Today's update is that we have now reached 2,625 meters depth. We are targeting to deep up to, to drill up to 3.5 kilometers, 3,500 meters. Since just below 2,300 meters, we have experienced some technical challenges and delays, but we are using well-experienced drillers who, working with our technocrats, continue to find solutions and overcome those technical difficulties. This drill hole is important in that it is going to use science as the evidence to inform the legislation, the character and posture in the event that the country decides to develop shale gas, as it were, in a manner that will be sustainable, that will mitigate and/or eliminate aspects of environmental pollution, in a manner that will minimize the impact of seismicity and water pollution, amongst others. So we are very excited about the support that government has given us, and our department in particular, in the responsibility of undertaking this research, and increasingly with the department using science evidence to make policy decisions, as it were. Here we work with PASA, the Petroleum Agency of South Africa, amongst others. We collaborate with them, and they are the lead, and we are providing the research aspect in respect of the geo-environmental baseline. Here we've taken over the responsibility of implementing the carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration program. This, again, is a scientific intervention that explores the possibilities of continuing to use coal in a manner that is aligned with the climate mitigation requirement, as it were, and consistent with our international protocols of mitigating the activities that contribute towards increased climate change. And we are quite delighted that in the space of less than a year, we have made remarkable progress, starting with the relocation of a previously identified site in the in KZN, the Zululand Basin. We have moved closer to a site that is close to the major emitters in Mpumalanga. We have engaged with the authorities, the traditional leaders, the NGOs, and a number of other critical stakeholders, both in KZN, to inform them about the decision to relocate the pilot site, as well as those who are in Mpumalanga. And so far, we are quite comfortable with the program and progress that we have made. And our partners are indeed quite delighted and amazed at the pace that the Council for Geoscience has been able to move in implementation of this program. Here we developed the hypothesis that the Vest Basin, that has been a contributor of over 40,000 tons of gold, more than a third of gold on surface, arises from the Vest Basin as it is plotted here. The hypothesis that we have developed is that with the Frederford Dome incident, it would have dispersed the Vest Basin to the Far East. And we already knew that there were gold mines in this part of the world. While we were working on the CCUS geological information, we intercepted some exciting lithologies that demonstrate the possibilities of further extending the Vest Basin in areas that are not yet known. It is part of our program in the current year to drill, to test, and confirm the hypothesis. And if indeed if hypothesis is confirmed, it will reverse the losses that we have made as a major producer of gold, a position that we have assumed for over a century. Geology has broad applications, and in respect of mine water and legacy mines, I am delighted, Chair, to report that we have completed the Van Rijn Canal in the east end of Gauteng province as part of our ingress control measures. And the completion of this canal, what it means in real terms, is that the water that was ingressing into the underground, millions of liters per day, have now been curtailed so that that water cannot run the risk of being contaminated and as part of the acid mine drainage problem that we have as a country. I'm particularly excited about the second project, the passive treatment pilot that a young a female geoscientist in the Council for Geoscience is leading in the Carolina area in Mpumalanga. What we have found there was that the water that was seeping underground was at pH levels of 2.8. What that means, Chair, is that that water was toxic and acid. It could not be consumed by human beings, by animals. It could not be, it would negatively affect possibilities of agriculture. And with this intervention that is led by our young scientist, the results, the preliminary results that this test site has yielded are absolutely amazing, in that they have enhanced the pH to just over 6. And that becomes water that that is nearly potable. This is without any treatment of chemicals. It's a natural process that is being used. And if indeed the committee is interested, it is one of the pride sites that we can invite the committee to demonstrate how this geoscience is finding expression indeed in addressing the societal challenges. Chair, we also use application applications of artificial intelligence to identify aquifers. You know, Chair, that increasingly we are becoming a water-strained country, and in the areas where we are mapping, we are using integrated and multidisciplinary approach to be able to identify aquifers that were previously unknown. We have had a success already in Maluti, in the Kwakwa area, and we are looking at replicating that model in Brackville, and we will extend to other areas that are seemingly strained. Again, we are moving at a scale and pace that we are able to. Chair, in respect of infrastructure development and land use, we support both safe and judicious development of land in respect of assessing the ground stability. We evaluate appropriate land use in line with the development suitability prior to development being considered. We use this thematic area for community safety, particularly in areas that are susceptible for the rocks to collapse and landslide, as well as areas of that are infested with dolomite. As you know, Chair, we do not have a shortage of those areas where our people are largely affected by dolomite landslides. Also, in respect of proactive disaster management and response readiness, we are part of the National Disaster Management Task Team and contribute the geosciences in respect of the possibilities of a disaster arising, whether it's in terms of the tsunami, earthquakes, landslides, and so on and so forth. Chair, in terms of our National Geohazard Mapping Program, I'm delighted to report that we have just completed a municipal scale landslide susceptibility map for Etewini Metropolitan Municipality. Chair, you may recall that Etewini, after experiencing continuous rain over a period of more than 10 days, there were many households that were negatively affected, their houses destroyed by virtue of the rocks on which their infrastructure has been established. So we have concluded this exercise. We have just concluded it. It is one of the flagship deliverables of the Geoscience Council, and this will guide the programs of infrastructure development in the Etewini program. We continue our legislative responsibility of undertaking national dolomite report reviews. We review in order of magnitude of thousands of these reports on an annual basis. Chair, there are many other applications of infrastructure and land use projects. One of the ones that got me very excited is our aggregate potential mapping. And so we are characterizing the aggregate that is used in infrastructure, be it construction of road infrastructure and any other infrastructure. And the preliminary results indicate the potential for us to align and support the small-scale mining program of the department, which is based on the balance of scientific evidence, as it were. We continue to support the Free State Department of Human Settlement in the geotechnical investigations of 51 towns across the Free State province. We are also working with the Housing Development Agency in respect of the Hutong Ground Stability Risk Assessment. I think, Chair, you would be aware of the many sinkholes that the people of Hutong have experienced over the years. And the only way that we would understand and be able to manage and control these sinkholes is with the geological information mapped at the right scale. Chair, I did report previously on our support to ESCOM in respect of the probabilistic seismic hazard analysis, in respect of their application for the renewal of an operating license of Uber. That work is continuing. We are also being supported by world-class scientists who have done this kind of work elsewhere in the world, and we have deliberately included some of our young scientists so that they too can assume the world-class status into the future. In respect of our geoscience diplomacy program, our Africa footprint is growing, and these are the various countries where we have done work or are actively doing work or actively pursuing collaboration and work with those countries. On legislative matters, Chair, I did indicate that the department, the minister has published the Geoscience Act regulations. We are working with the department to process the comments that we have received from the interested and affected stakeholders, and we intend to engage to support the department in its social program on familiarizing society at large with the implications of these regulations. I'll quickly run through the commitments that we have made. These are the various perspectives that we have. In terms of our first perspective, we have put up these measures as the financial, as part of our financial stewardship. These help us to constantly ensure that we utilize our financial resources as optimally as possible, primarily focused on delivering our mandate. Chair, it is our intention to have zero audit qualifications as a commitment of governance that we make. Chair, we understand that transformation and procurement from SMMEs is one of the central policy tenets of South Africa, and we are deliberate in this respect in targeting to procure not less than 30% of goods and services from SMMEs. And in fact, at the beginning of this month, we have employed an enterprise development manager so that they can begin to be deliberate in preparing the historically disadvantaged to participate in the specialized fields of geosciences that continue to be dominated by the previously advantaged members of society. Chair, this is in respect of our capable human capital. You notice that we deliberately invest in skills, and we make a commitment of spending not less than 1% of our leviable amount of payroll towards the development of skills. We've developed deliberate programs to encourage our colleagues with disability to declare their disability, and we've set a target of not having less than 1.5 of the staff with disability within the Council for Geoscience. At the scientific staff level, Chair, we had started 10 years ago, we had around 10-15% of the females as part of the scientific staff. And you would notice, Chair, that we are now hovering around 40%, and it is our intention to steadily grow the female representation in the scientific cohort to be around almost 50% by the end of this administration. And the female representation at ESCO, we are also intending to grow that to 50%. We have a healthy pipeline of female junior and senior managers who would be able to readily grow into those positions as we develop. These targets I've already alluded to in terms of our technical programs and making sure that the science work that we do is not only for the benefit of those who are within the Council for Geoscience, but it contributes towards advancement of the body of knowledge of geosciences. And it is for this reason that we have set targets for peer-reviewed publications in scientific journals, book chapters, and so on, so that the scientific prowess that is inherent in the organization can be contributory to the body of knowledge globally. Chair, I will summarily ask the CFO to lead us with the finances, and then I'll conclude as soon as he has done so. CFO?
Thank you, CEO, and good morning, Chair and honorable members and all the attendees. Now, to support the good work that the CEO has presented, it equally requires the financial support. And as a section, as a state institution, which is a Section 3A public finance classification, we have a grant allocation, and this slide shows exactly the figures that have been provided for in terms of the baseline. As you can see on the first row, that we've got a baseline at the level of 200 million, which is increased on a year-to-year basis at an inflationary rate. That is not real growth, but just for the running of the organization. Now, we have been blessed that we have been afforded an opportunity to support, additional to the baseline, the economic recovery program. And to that, we've been given the allocations as indicated in the next year. This year was 70 million. And the next year is 128 million, 147, and 154 million respectively, going up to 2023 and 24. We have, of course, a ring-fenced or special funding for ring-fenced projects. Those projects are very specific. In this current year, it's at the level of 354 million. And there are those that end and they curtail. They don't proceed to the year 23-24, but only a few of them, as is indicated in the subsequent slide that I'll show on the on the analysis of the baseline grant. We've got a sales and commercial part of the organization, which we is at the level of 30 million. Also, it's increased at 10% year on year. And the last part is with the country income. We should be mainly interest on the funds that we on short-term investment at a level of about 4 million. So in total, in the current year, we've got 7.3 million, and in the subsequent years, declined because of the short specific funding that we've received for particular projects. Now, on the spend side, next slide, CEO, on the government spending. I think you've run far ahead. Let's go to the expenditure part. That's fine. Thank you. What I wanted to highlight is that we've got our main cost as the brains of the council, because we are a science institution. We have to have a very appropriate level of expertise and capacity, and that is our major cost in terms of cost. We have got a supporting element. We are not myopic in our approach. We've got batteries that we give up, what we give to students to develop those brands at the level of for about 4 million. If you correspondingly, the operating costs are aligned to the top part that I've already alluded to on the project. Those are the expenditure part of it. And then the last bit would be the investment in our capital to keep our machinery going. And that is the balance. As you are aware, we have not got don't have the latitude to budget over the revenues we budgeted to break even. Next slide, CEO. So this is the slide that's a replica of what was presented to us in terms of the allocations. I've already set the contents. This is just to support the details, the various grant allocations. You can move to the next slide. And this is the outlook starting from, the retrospective looking at the funding in terms of revenue streams as of the 2000, the 10 years ago, and it shows majorly that we have become more dependent and on the ring-fenced or specialized funding, specialist or specific funding that is meant for specific projects. And that's what that we intend to change and have a more sustainable funding model to fit our long-term mandate. Next slide, CEO. This is just to show the investment in the infrastructure. As you appreciate, we've got the people, now we've got we need the world-class equipment that supports the work. So this is our investment over the past, and we plan to constantly, when we've got what is available, to replenish our capital infrastructure. Next slide, CEO. This is showing then that we are a stable institution. Over the 10 years, we're showing a steady growth in terms of total assets at a level of about 7%. And we consistently believe that should be the case. Next slide, CEO. Now, this one is showing that we are able to manage our finances such that we are meeting our commitments. We are able to pay for the obligations that we've entered into, and we are going concern. Thank you. Next slide, CEO.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. In the next couple of slides is our human capital. This is to show that our ratio of core to support staff is at 58% to 42%. This is our gender breakdown of the organization. And this is gender overall in the organization, not only the scientific staff. As it were, we are currently sitting at 52% males and 48% females. This is our distribution in respect of youth versus non-youth. The difficulty with tracking this one is that those who were youth only 2 years ago, some of them are no longer youth. They've entered my cohort of the non-youth. This is our deliberate investment in the skills pipeline. Chair, you'd notice that from PhD, Masters, BSc Honours and BSc, we are supporting 51 students and throughout all the categories of society, as it were. I've spoken at length about the staff living with a disability. Colleagues have led an important campaign of making our colleagues with disabilities to feel at home and not feel that they need to hide their disability. And that is why you are seeing that sharp increase of 2.1. Don't know what signs, and all that we seek is the support of our stakeholders in engaging them. This last penultimate slide, Chair, is a demonstration of the footprint of our scientific prowess. You would see that the publications of our scientists are used all over the world, in the African continent,
in the Americas and Europe and Australia and everywhere else in the world. And that becomes part of our contribution to the advancement of the body of geoscience knowledge, as it were. And the graph at the bottom here shows that since we have organized ourselves with the data policy approved by the board, and now with the regulation and developing a mechanism streamlined for distribution of knowledge and information, and this is the quantum of information that we have been able to distribute, and those are the various categories of our information finding expression in society. In conclusion, Chair, we are systematically expanding our geoscience mapping program, and we have aligned it to the resources that we are afforded. And this is beginning to yield desirable results, and it is enabling us to identify, for instance, the mineral targets that are a subject of prioritization, so that we can optimize the contribution of geoscience to South Africa's economic recovery and reconstruction plans. I did indicate the second bullet. We are also assessing alternative commercial activities that will augment the financial sustainability of the organization in the medium to long term. And in this respect, we are exploring the application of a first mover principle advantage in developing and applying innovative geoscience products for both commercial benefit to CGS as well as the knowledge purposes. And it is in this space, Chair, that we'll continue to collaborate with the strategic partners within the geoscience community. We are in conversation with the African Exploration, Mining and Financing Corporation. We are in conversation with the Central Energy Fund. We are in conversations with MinTech. We are already collaborating with PASA. And in time, we'll be looking at possibilities of having conversation with the private sector, as well as other stakeholders, to implement our program. And all that we seek, Chair, is a baseline appropriation stability that will enable medium to long-term planning and sustainability of the organization. We thank you very much, Chair, and I do want to thank my chairman and the board for their continuous support, the executives, the managers, and the entire staff of the Council for Geoscience, who have worked throughout the lockdown to continue to deliver their mandate, and certainly the support of the ministry and the department, as well as the portfolio committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Apologies, Chair. I was trying to unmute my device and it wouldn't allow me. Thank you so much, Chair. That is the presentation for the Council for Geoscience. We hand over to you, Chair, for questions and comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Wale and Dr. Mache and Mr. Mabuza with the presentation together, including yourself all. Honorable members, are there any take? I see the hand of Honorable Lorema. I only have got one question, and you will continue to answer this question, Honorable Mr. Dr. Mache and Mr. Mabuza. I will ask that question. But let me give first Honorable Rema, Honorable Thanks, Mr. Chair. Can I go? Yes. Then after you, it will be Honorable Malinga. Then is it Honorable Chambers? Ne?
Honorable Mr. Mangsi.
Oh, okay. Honorable Prof. Then after that, it will be Honorable Kula. Honorable Loren.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mabuza, nice to hear your voice again. I've got a bunch of questions. First of all, with regard to the mapping program, it seems to me to be rather unambitious considering the modern technology. You say you aim to push the mapping of 1 to 50,000 up to 9.5% this year. Can you just give us some comment on why it can't be faster? In the same, on the same subject, I'd be interested to know if you compared our mapping costs to any other mining jurisdictions. I'd be interested to see if we're getting value for money compared to, say, Western Australia. On the question of high priority mineral assessments, how do you decide what are high priority? Is it on the basis of mapping that you do, or are you approached by mining companies? So which way around, what feeds that decision to make something a high priority? Could you be a bit more specific or sum up for me maybe? What is the CGS doing specifically or differently to achieve a 5% global share of exploration expenditure? First of all, how much time and money is being spent on investigating the Maltino Indwe coal fields, and why? There were several previous studies that found it to be a low potential substandard coal of little value. So why the concentration on that? There's the internal issue of staff at CGS. Do you have any plans to rationalize or cut staff, particularly scientific staff versus secondary or support staff? I would suggest that the ratio of your support staff to actual scientists seems too high. Can you comment on that, please? When it comes to the accessibility of data, why is geophysical data that you've gathered not on open file yet? It should surely be once it is processed, so that anybody can go in from their laptop. But that's not how it works at CGS. I would suggest that the data policy is still not acceptable. Why do people have to pay for information? Why do people have to sign a non-disclosure agreement? That doesn't happen in Western Australia. Should it not be the aim of CGS to make this data as accessible as possible to encourage exploration? And finally, there's just a question about the Geoscience Act regulations. What are the next steps, and by when do you expect to take them, and by when do you expect these to be implemented? Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings.
Yeah, Valencia. Continue.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to yourself, colleagues in the Portfolio Committee, the department is led by the acting DG Mamuabe, CEOs and chairpersons of board in our committee and our committee staff. Chairperson, you know with CGS, I don't usually have questions. I only have comments for them, because I can see that they are scientists at work. Chair, I am very pleased. You see, when you touch Mpumalanga, that's my province, Mpumalanga. I am very pleased with what you said about Mpumalanga, especially on slide 26, and would really encourage, because I saw a slide where you are talking about stakeholder engagement, that if you pursue this work in Mpumalanga, you must intensify your stakeholder engagement. Also, welcome the issue of bursaries, Chairperson. I saw the CFO saying that they have put aside 4 million rand for bursaries. That is applauded, Chair. Lastly, Chair, I also welcome their slide number 14. Thank you very much, Chair.
morning, colleagues. Have we lost the chair? Or is it me who can't hear you?
No, I'm expecting Prof.
Okay, so those are the only questions. Over
no, 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 no. Wait, It's supposed to be Prof. Simanga. Then after it will be Honorable Kola.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm sorry I wasn't aware I was the second one. As a new member of the committee, the portfolio committee, I only have clarity seeking questions. I'll put three questions, Chair, with regard to shale gas explorations. When we were informed that shale gas had been discovered in the Karoo, there was a lot of excitement as if it was going to a big boost to our economy. Then suddenly the climax led to an anticlimax when we were informed about the hazards to the water, hazards to health and things like that, and it was at the verge of being abandoned. Now I see once again a lot of excitement in this presentation. Everything seems to be positive and we are going ahead. I would like to know what has happened in between. That is number one. Number two, I'm also interested in especially ownership. I don't know whether it is entirely in the hands of the private sector or is the government having a stake in this exploration. And the last question, Chair, is about geoscience. It seems it is geoscience that gives us all the positivity about this kind of mining. And I don't know whether they have just discovered something new or perhaps they were not approached or they were not involved when we were given the sad news of the hazards contained in this kind of mining. Thank you very much.
I thought you know the line, Honorable Kola.
No, thanks a lot, sir. I hope I'm audible. Let me welcome the presentation by the Council for Geoscience. And I must say that Ubauma Bulls and Timbalak have not taken down their standards. They don't disappoint, as always, Chair. The first issue I want to speak to, Chair, is around their infrastructure and land use projects, especially the housing, their program that they are having with the housing development agency to address the problem of the area of Kutsong, the ground stability program in Kutsong. I want to understand, Chair, that because the challenge has been persisting for many years in that particular area, that how long is this assessment likely to take before we can see progress, Chair, on it? And that the agency of the matter, because in some instances, it has led to a result of loss of life and belonging of many people living in that area. It has also disintegrated many families in that area and has got many knock-on effects. So how long is that assessment likely to take? So the process of moving people from that area, which I don't think is proper for people to be living in, can then be undertaken, Chair. Two, I've got a concern around the staff component at the Council for Geoscience. In their presentation, there is a 42% of their staff is their core staff, then 58% is support staff. How does this staff component impact on the work of the council? Because in my view is that I think they need to cut down on the support staff and invest more in the in their core staff, Chair. Three, Chair, is around the another question around the human resource. In terms of the decrease in the employment of females in the year 2020 and 2021 compared to the three previous years, can they elaborate as to why have we seen that decline in the employment of females at the agency? Four chairs around the head staff count. I've been looking at the numbers of youth, and the CEOs say that some of them have aged and are joining him in old age, that have passed that year of youth. But I've seen that there's been a substantial decrease in their employment numbers in terms of youth. For year 2016 and 2017, we had 43% of young people. In year 2017-2018, we had 40%. In year 2019-2020-2024, 34%. In year 2020-2021, 30%. So you can see that is a substantial decrease of youth. So I want to know about, are you having a program of peeling away gradually with young people at the council? And are there any prospects of an increase in terms of the number of youth that are employed at the council? I think Honorable Malinga has covered this point. I think the council must be commended for their bursary program and be encouraged that they must continue to invest more money in this bursary scheme so that we can get more, especially because I know that it will benefit in the main young people. I don't want to respond on behalf of the council, Chair, but I think there are persistent questions that continue to be asked by some amongst us around the Molchino in the Coalfields project. That's how much is spent on it. Why? Which to me, I don't think those are questions that we ought to be entertaining at this point in time. Because my preoccupation is that what is the long-term benefit of this project? Because in my view, that this project needs to be given a full support so that it can be able to unleash the full potential of Eskom so that we're able to deal with the electricity challenge we have in the country, rather than to ask why. I don't think it's necessary. Lastly, the DMRE consistently has always spoken about the need that our entities need to be financially self-sustaining in the near future. And I want to know from the council, when is the council for geoscience likely to be self-sustaining? If that can be answered, Chair. Thanks.
Ms. Ngwabe and your team.
Thank you, Chair. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, DG. Dr. Markey, do you permit me to proceed, sir? Continue, sir. Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Markey. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, thank you very much for the comment. Honorable Lorimer, it's good to hear you back in the committee, sir. Is the mapping program unambitious? Absolutely not, Honorable Lorimer. You may recall that at the beginning we were highly aggressive. We had actually intended to have the whole country met at this scale within a period of 10 years. But of course, that requires the state to invest, we're determined, around 20 billion rand for the period of that 10 years. The reality is that our fiscus is not particularly strong, and so the country has bought into the value proposition of mapping the country. We have seen the results of countries that invest in geosciences. And that is, it is for this reason that team at the Council for Geoscience is that geoscience is a fulcrum for human development. It enables countries to make informed decisions about development. And you cannot make informed decisions about development if you do not have the information you need to be able to make those decisions. So we are therefore moving at the pace and scale. It's a language I have learned from the nuclear energy sector, that we must move at the energy and scale that is affordable to the country. We have been supported by the committee, by the department and ministry, and national treasury to the extent possible. And so it is for this reason that we are moving at this pace. It is nothing but the function of the resources that we have to be able to do that. In terms of mapping, we are at the lowest, we are at the bottom quartile of the costs of mapping compared to the other jurisdictions. We will know this because we also mapping, we are assisting Namibia with the mapping program. We are assisting Malawi. Those are the two current mapping programs where we have a presence, and they are funded by the they are funded from the donors, and so they have roped in amongst others the Council for Geoscience, and so we are quite comfortable, Honourable Lawrence, that we are at the bottom quartile relative to other jurisdictions. It is much more expensive in the developed economies like Australia, Canada, and the USGS, and others. So how do we prioritize minerals? Nobody comes and says to us, come and prioritize this mineral. We sit in a room, we look at the geoscience information that we have, we process it, without getting too technical, but we'll use geology, we'll use structural geology, we'll use geochemistry, we'll use geophysics, amongst others, we'll interpolate the information, process it, use a known mineralizing systems that have been proven. And in that process, we are able to identify the various targets. We know, for instance, that energy security is important. And so to the extent that certain minerals contribute to energy security, we'll therefore flag those targets as priority targets. We know that food security is a national priority. And therefore, when we identify those targets, we will therefore look at minerals that will secure food security. We know that health is a priority for humanity and for the country. And we, to the extent that we are able to identify minerals that have elements that are used in the health industries, we will then prioritize those types of minerals. So we have developed our own internal ranking system that is based on, we know that economic growth, job creation, and so on are other priorities. We know that junior and small-scale mining and junior mining is a priority. We know areas where infrastructure has been prioritized, and to the extent that we can assess the aggregates and prioritize those, we do so. And so what are we doing differently to achieve the 5%? The mapping at the scale of 1 in 50,000, the investment that the state is making in this investment is a first step towards that direction. We had the opportunity of the minister directing us to work with the officials in the department, as well as the Minerals Council of South Africa to draft the exploration implementation plan. And this has been drafted. We had the pleasure of working with the department and the Minerals Council to contribute critical factors that need to be considered in order to unleash this 5%. We think that it is a low-hanging fruit. There are certainly areas that, as a country, we can do better. And on the side of the Council for Geoscience, ours is to make to avail the information. We are already availing that information. We have an information booklet in our website. Anybody that wants that information, the bulk of that information is free. So specifically on Montino, it's always exciting, Honorable Lorimer, because you know, when you look at the coal in the Northern Hemisphere and you compare it with the coal in South Africa overall, and so if you are comparing within South Africa, yes, the quality is at the lower end. But if you take a global view, then you will begin to appreciate that the Montino coal is in fact of superior quality to all coals in the Northern Hemisphere. Poland and Germany, and parts of China, they are burning what is called lignite, which is brown coal. The CVs of calorific values of those coals are close to zero. And here you are looking at the calorific values of around 16. The Letabo power station in the Vaal was constructed by the National Party at the time, government, using the coal in that area of similar to lower characteristic. And it continues to play a critical role in our energy basket. I don't think that investing in knowing what we have is a waste. Because when we have established what we have, then we can make informed choices as a country. As to what those choices are, they will be a subject of the investment in establishing that we know. And I think it's important for the country to continue to take science very seriously, so that science becomes the basis on which decisions, critical decisions of development are made. Whether they be energy decisions, development decisions, infrastructure, and so on and so forth. Is there a plan to rationalize the staff? And I think I would answer this one together with the question you asked, Honorable Connor. There are legislated steps and requirements in administration that make it very difficult for us to not have necessary warm bodies that are occupying many of those governance requirements. In order for us to continue to comply with the governance prescripts, we need the resources that will fulfill that requirement within the organization. If the idea is that there are some of those requirements, perhaps that we should not necessarily pay attention to, which I don't believe is what you are saying, then perhaps a concept of rationalization can be considered. We take compliance to governance very seriously, and it is for this reason that it's not just employing people who are floating in the Council for Geoscience. Every single position that we have is because it's got a critical role to play. Of course, we want to grow the base of our scientific staff. We have too many geoscientists in the system. We have not mapped as much as we should. We should be able to adopt and accelerate the implementation of this program. But in order to do that, we need baseline stability. If we employ people without the baseline stability, it will be a reckless decision on our part. And it is for that reason, honorable members, that you those ratios in the manner that you see. They are not inconsistent with many of the science concerns. If you look at here in South Africa and elsewhere, the ratio of 60-40 is not an unreasonable ratio. I've seen it being worse in other parts of the world. I've also seen it being better in other parts of the world. Geophysics data, why are we not processing that like the and making it available? Some of the data that we have collected is not data that we have collected for ourselves. And I think this this issue is normally conflated. We have been collecting data on behalf of third parties as well. In certain instances, it is data that belongs to projects that are outside of the Council for Geoscience, but elsewhere in government. Because we understand issues of confidentiality in the manner that the geoscience regulations also intend, that right holders should be able to submit their data to us and know that their competitive advantage will not be compromised by virtue of us being being reckless. So to the extent that that data is made available, we make it available. And I think, Honorable Chair, it is also important that, because we are normally told that this data is available for free everywhere else in the world. When we go to meet with our counterparts in those parts of the world, we then discover that what is said and what they do are not the same things. And I think it is important to establish those facts. You cannot go, we have recently gone to Germany, we were engaging with our counterparts there, and you are not going to find information, geological information on their website. You will go to Australia, they deliberate areas where certain information is deliberately made available for a particular purpose. But not all information is necessarily dumped for public consumption. So that's why we are talking about the first mover advantage, so that once that data is processed and then looked at, validated, its applications evaluated, there's some of the data, for instance, that has military application. That's not the data that you would just take, geoscientific data that you would make available to anybody, but you should be able to make that data available for military applications, as it were. The regulations, the department is moving with speed, Honorable Lorimer. I know that next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, we would have gone away. We've dedicated those 2 days with the officials to process the comments, and that will then make a determination of what the next critical steps are. I'm informed that the next steps would be also to invite those who make representation submission to make representation, and we would also engage with the broader community that does not have the benefit of a website and so on. So it is our intention to support the department, and I think Acting DG can possibly articulate on the time frames, but I do expect that this will be finalized in not a distant future. Honorable Malinga, thank you very much for the comments. We assure you that we have started in earnest with the stakeholder engagement program in Mpumalanga for the CCUS and other programs. And we'll intensify those. We'll continue to intensify those. We pay a premium to stakeholder engagement. Once you have the support of communities and society, it makes it easy for scientists to put their boots on the ground and do their work and immerse themselves as part of the members of that society. Honorable Prof. Simang, welcome, says it's good to interact with you. Yes, at the beginning, Sheikh Gaz created a lot of enthusiasm development in South Africa until the hazards were illuminated and benchmark studies done. Government took a responsible decision, in my view, in saying that we will hold any further development of shale gas in abeyance until we have satisfied ourselves with the research that has been done. And so the delay, the main delay, were caused because we needed to get the buy-in of the stakeholders. So we went back to those very stakeholders with the department, NCGS, to engage them and show them that there is value in us doing the research. So we are not doing exploration. We are doing research so that that research will then be used to affirm the legislation that protects water pollution, environment, and so on and so forth. So we are hoping that with the outcomes of the research that will contribute as a baseline to unleash this potential of shale gas in South Africa is where we are at. I think on the issues of ownership of shale gas, with your permission, I would ask the department, because we are just science council. We are not dealing with the regulation and the ownership of natural resources. Honorable Kula, thank you very much for the comments, sir. The work that we are doing with the HDA in Gutsong started in the past couple of months. The initial collaboration that we have would possibly run for the next year, Dr. Khoza. I will just ask you when I'm done to provide the details. Based on what we know induces the sinkholes in the Gutsong area, we anticipate that other areas that are dolomite infested, coupled with the triggers that we are still assessing, I will not announce them yet, there is a possibility of a wider research that needs to be done so that it can guide the decision makers appropriately. So in the particular area in Gutsong, this is a short-term agreement, but I must state that there is a need for us to be deliberating, looking at a regional impact of certain triggers of these sinkholes, to the extent that Gutsong has been severely affected, as you have elegantly articulated, Honorable Kula. I think I've addressed the ratio of support and scientific staff. I will ask Dr. Tsipa just to comment on the, I didn't quite get the comment on the qualification of women over the past 3 months. But Dr. Tsipa is our executive of corporate services. I would ask him to come after Dr. Khoza. On the issue of youth, Honorable God, maybe I said it joking. So if you look at the senior managers that we have appointed, just the senior managers, both male and female, in the past 3 years, including executives, by the way, in the past 3 years, when they arrived at CGS, all of them were youth. And my graphs were beautiful, and I loved showing these graphs to Parliament, because they were just showing that the youth is here. It is not a program to get rid of the youth. It is a problem of age not being a permanent factor. All of them are still in the system. Many of them are here with me today, except that they have now gone over that hurdle of being a youth. Now, I must still report to you And when I report to you what I reported 3 years ago as youth, and they are no longer youth today. Hey, yeah. That is the challenge, Honorable Coach. We have absolutely no, we love the youth. The youth are the future, and we continue to invest in the youth and expose them as optimally as possible. When would the CGS become financially sustainable? Chair, we've started a program internally, and we are still having a conversation with our board on seeking to accelerate those activities that will help us to achieve a level of financial sustainability. And part of that is the partnership that I've alluded to with African Exploration, with Mintec, with the Central Energy Fund. Firstly, within the family, and with time, we will look at how do we expand outside the family. But fundamentally, we must guard our primary mandate as a science council. Now, a science council, by definition, should not be in the business of making too much money, because the science mandate ought to be protected and not be compromised. So if you can allow us a bit of time to process those propositions, Honorable Chair, we would be able to come back at some stage and indicate whether what we are contemplating is sensible. It is still going through a test of scrutiny within the organization before we take it to the ministry and ultimately yourselves, Lord Gouverneur. Dr. Koza, can you say a few words about HTA and Dr. Sipa on the qualifications of women? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, certainly. Thanks, CEO. Good morning, Honorable Members. The work Kuzong started last year, and we hope to finish it in the next 6 to 8 months. The idea is to look at all the available information that has been collected over the last couple of years and advise HDA appropriately. So we hopefully will be able to complete that in the next 6 to 8 months. Thanks, CEO.
Thank you, CEO. Perhaps let me start by underscoring that our ratio is 60-40, which means we've got 60 core colleagues or 60 scientific staff members and 40 support staff. So essentially we've got 2 support staff for every 3 scientific staff members. So there's more scientific staff than there is support staff. And as the CEO has indicated, that ratio is consistent with the other science councils, and we're monitoring it very, very closely to make sure that we don't have more support staff than we have scientific staff. And perhaps also just to dwell a little bit on the staff rationalization. So what we do as a matter of course is that when positions become vacant, we interrogate that particular position and decide whether we should fill it or absorb some of those responsibilities. So we go through a requisition, a need for that position to be replaced, et cetera, et cetera. And when we can absorb some of the functions, we easily do so. About 2 or so years ago, we even went on a drive of encouraging those colleagues that were nearing retirement to apply for early retirement. And when they did not replace them. And I think also we lost about 6 to 10 employees through retirement, and we never replaced them. So we allow natural attrition to do the rationalization for us, as opposed to going for the jugular of just cutting staff. With regard to the gender parity at organizational level, We are now saying that we're almost sitting at parity, so we've got almost 50-50 at organizational level. But the focus now is to ensure that we've got gender parity at strategic in strategic positions, such as EXCO, such as scientific cohorts, such as the business unit managers. And we have come a long way. There's quite a lot of ground that we've traversed. For instance, if you just look at the cohort of the business unit managers, and that is almost the think tanker of the organization. We've got more females there than males. We're sitting at, I think, about 56% of females at that level. So that is a level below EXCO. And we hope that over time we'll start having that parity as well at an ESCO level. If you look at the demographics, for instance, in the GTP, that's the technical program that is essentially driving the mandate of the organization. We're almost sitting at 40% females there, 60% males. So it's again an indication that we're having this gender representation at very strategic position, as opposed to just looking at it from an organizational level. With regard to and what we're also doing in terms of nurturing that gender from the grassroots level, we've got more buzzers in the female cohort than we have in the male cohort. Internally, with the buzzers that we have awarded as part of the staff, we're sitting at almost 53% of our employees that are buzzers. That are females, and 47 being males. So we are trying to manage this gender from the very low level, hoping that over time we'll start seeing that manifesting at those strategic positions that I've spoken about. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hotela. Dr. Marke, I don't know if you want to wrap up before we hand over to the DG.
Thank you, CEO. I think what's important is to, and you haven't emphasized it a lot, is the fact that with our integrated mapping program, we have defined the beds below the coal seams of the Wheat Bank or Emalahleni area. Secondly, our drive is to look at minerals that are going to be energy efficient minerals like lithium, rare earth elements, and so on. And this pegmatite area we've mapped in the Northern Cape is proof that we are really looking at minerals that are going to grow the country and are going to get the country into an economic recovery plan. I just wanted to mention those two, which are very important. And of course, the side of thermal energy, there's a lot that's happening already with CCUS and some of the projects that the young scientists are looking at in terms of energy. Thank you, sir, and thank you, Chairman. Thank you, DDG.
Okay, thank you, Doc, and Mr. Mabuza. Just one quick comment from me on the shale gas project. I think the question came from Prof. Mang. Prof, work continues on this program. Right? There's the one aspect of it where the actual scientific research is underway, which it was in the presentation. It's undertaken jointly by the Council for Geoscience and Petroleum Agency of South Africa. But there's also the legislative framework part. You would know that South Africa has never exploited shale gas resources. And we therefore do not have legislation that covers the exploitation of shale gas. And to that extent, what we then did following the 2012 CAPE memo was to work on the regulations that were meant to regulate environmental issues pertaining to the exploitation of shale gas. Those regulations were developed and gazetted, but unfortunately they were challenged in court and eventually set aside by the Supreme Court of Appeal on the basis that not they were not set aside for any reason but the fact that the court said, in terms of the National Environmental Management Act, NEMA, the Minister of Fisheries, Forestry and Environment is the minister responsible for developing any legislation that has to do with environmental matters. As of 2019, when the regulations were set aside, DEF has been hard at work in the drafting of reworking and drafting the regulations as per the court order. And they've been consulting us during drafting, and they are almost at the tail end of the drafting, and they will soon gazette for public comments. So then at that point, we will be able then to process the applications that have been sitting in the system that we haven't been able to process as a result of the gap in law in terms of regulating the activities for the exploitation of shale gas. So those are the responses, Chairperson. Thank you so much. Over to you.
Thank you, JMRE. Let me do it like this. State Diamond Trade. And then after you, it's going to be the regulator. Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator. Then we will ask questions.
Okay, thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. The State Diamond Trader is led by the Chairperson of the Board. I will, without any waste of time, hand over to the Chairperson and the CEO to take us through the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DBG. Good morning, Chairperson, and greetings to all the honorable members, greetings to my colleagues, the chairpersons of the state entities, and good morning to the staff of the State Diamond Trader. Chairperson, my name is Monica Malikatalizuan. I am the chairperson of the State Diamond Trader. I am not alone this morning. I have with me in attendance the CEO of the State Diamond Trader, Santuni, and he is accompanied by the CFO and the Ops Manager. And the two will be the people that will be doing the presentation in the name, but we also have in attendance Chairperson, the Company Secretary. Chairperson, with your permission, I just want to make a few opening remarks so that I don't have to come in at the end. With regards to what the team will be presenting to you, Chair, next slide, please. It's a table of contents, which has about 10 points to it. Can you please move to the next slide, CEO? There's a table of contents which has about 10 points. I'd like for you, Chairperson, to know, in particular, our key challenges as we present, which will center around the financial health of the institution. I do need to make a point that in the last quarter we have made progress and good sales with regard to RAF, but that we are still financially challenged. Chairperson, when we go to the background, which is the next slide, we will see that our organization is 14 years old, and that is key to Schedule B entity. Chair, I will not bother you with our vision and our mandate, which is known very well by the members. Our mission is centered around equitable access and diamond beneficiation as members of the committee, which we are aware. And we are mandated, Chairperson, to to buy and sell rough diamonds to promote equitable access to and of beneficiation of the country's diamonds and to grow South African diamonds and cutting industry. We are also expected to address the market distortions and to purchase up to 10% of the run of mine of the South African soil, an area of many challenges. And regarding the governance structure, Chairperson, I believe this structure would be very familiar to the membership, would be very familiar to this structure. But regarding the members of the board, Chair, in brief, we did present to you as that we have an 11-member strong board that was appointed on the 11th of November by the minister, which is a mixture of experience, knowledge, and very good experience in this industry, Chairperson. And there is the list of members of the board. Chairperson, I can see that operations are the function of the CEO, and so I will leave this area for him to easily manage and to send to yourself. But before I go off, I just wish to thank this team from the State Diamond Trader for the good work that they continue to do amidst the challenges, some of which include the COVID challenges that we all know. Thank you very much, DDG, and over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chair of the Portfolio Committee and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the chairpersons of the other entities, our colleagues, the committee staff, and also the acting DDG Mamutwabe, and my colleagues at the State Diamond Trader. Chairperson, my presentation will basically deal with the operation of the entity. I will just highlight that and later deal with the achievements that we have made in our 2021 financial year. I'll also deal about the COVID and its impact on the State Diamond Trader and what have we done to deal with it. And later, Chair, I'll also deal with the process that we have used in crafting our 2021-2022 APP, deal with the APP itself, the key challenges that we have, and how are we going to mitigate those challenges. And I'll also deal with the risk that we have identified that will assist us to see how we operate as an entity. And also, Chair, then later the finance CFO will deal with our financial situation. Chair, our operations basically start with, we have four wings in our operations. Basically, we have the purchasing department, which in terms of Section 59B of the Diamond Act, basically they are the ones that do inspections at the producers. After an agreement has been reached with the producers on the number of carats that they want to take, they will also go to the GIDD to ensure that they verify all the prices and agreements are done. Then that's where a decision will be taken by the State Diamond Trader whether to accept or decline the parcels that have been made available. From there, we move to our internal processes chair, which is our production department, which basically deals with sorting and evaluation all the diamonds that we have already purchased from the producers. They'll also check the inventory that we have as a State Diamond Trader, and also do a financial reporting in terms of all the diamonds that basically we have as a State Diamond Trader. Then we have our client relations, basically that deals with client issues, ensuring that all the records of our clients are there, and also ensuring that our clients, in terms of legislation, they do qualify and also comply to all the issues of legislation. And they also deal with other stakeholder relations with our clients. Then from there, we have the section chairperson that deals with sales. After the diamonds have been sorted, and then they will make sales to our clients, checking also that they also observe the compliance in terms of legislation. Then a deal is made with our clients. Then later chairperson, we also have the support staff from our finance department. We have the legal and company secretariat. We also have marketing and communications, as well as human resources. These are the services that we have. In our finance, we also have the ICT. Those are the support services that we have, chairperson. The highlights that we have for 2021, basically, chairperson, we had planned about 29 targets. Out of the 29, we have managed to achieve the 19 targets. Five of them were partially achieved, chairperson, because some were just approved after the end of the financial year. Then five were not approved, chairperson, due to the COVID, and were referred to the next financial year. This, chairperson, because it's still 2021, has not yet been audited by the Auditor General, but this is the information that we can give in terms of the achievements that we have made general in terms of our 2021 achievements. The next slide, chairperson, deals with our the impact of COVID in the entity. Since the inception of the pandemic, we only had three employees that were affected, and all of them have fully recovered. During the period of 2020, around March up to July, chairperson, we didn't have any sales, or we didn't even go to get sales because the industry was basically closed, chairperson. So there was no activity at the state diamond trader except the administrative work that we're doing as the state diamond trader. The cash flow was basically negatively affected during the period, chair. At the end of the day, we operated on the financial reserve as the state diamond trader. The ADSA chairperson that we are basically mostly supporting couldn't also purchase due to the cash flow challenges that they also have, and there was also a reduction in their personnel. So it affected ourselves as a state diamond trader, but also some of the clients that we have. Should the situation, chairperson, persist, we are going to have a challenge in sustaining the entity. However, chair, as the chairperson has also indicated, from late July up to now, chairperson, we have seen some improvement. We are on the rise, chair. We are also maintaining the good record currently. The situation has basically improved in the last 8 months, chairperson. We came up with some interventions during the COVID, chairperson. We had some short-term interventions, mid-term interventions, and long-term interventions. We started with coming with cost containment measures that we have implemented as the state diamond trader. For the year 2020 and 2021 financial year, we didn't have a salary increase to all the staff. Only critical position was filled And we also had to negotiate with some of our clients and our producers in dealing with buying and selling, so that at least there was that innovation that will affect the entity also together, our clients and also our producers. And that has also assisted the entity. We are still lacking Jefferson. We're still waiting for the DMR to assist us approving the ITC revolving credit that we used to have previously. The midterm chairperson was asked to again review our business plan. We had that in advance for the new board to relook at it. We have started the process, and we are also going to present to the board our new business plan, which of course will
apologies, Honorable Chair, we seem to have lost Mr. Ngoni. I'll quickly give him a call.
Good, depend again how much you take off the time.
Anyone in the room with you?
No, there's no objection connecting. I don't know what the problem.
Okay, please reconnect.
Okay.
Apologies, Chair. I've managed to let him know he wasn't aware that he's been disconnected.
Well, yeah, no, who was disconnected? Not the.
Yes.
The presentation was
bad. Yes, Chair. He wasn't aware that he's been kicked out of the meeting.
So they must not take off their...
Okay, let me communicate with them quickly. Apologies. Apologies, Chair. He says it seems it's a problem with the network in the office. All the other colleagues have also been kicked out of the meeting. They are now trying to connect via a cell phone so that it's quicker. Thank you, Chair.
You see what I always say, if now they were to be kicked out forever, if there was a quick to the point, probably would have had the major gist of the presentation. Otherwise, I will we'll end up inviting the regulator if they are not coming in quickly.
Honorable Chair, there actually is a request from their side that while they sort out their connection challenge, maybe the Chair could take the regulator's presentation. Apologies for that, Chair.
Regulator?
Okay, while the presentation is being put up, Chair, maybe I will also take the opportunity to say that the regulator is led by the chairperson, Mr. Ngomezulu, and the CEO, Mr. Khosa. I hand over to you, colleagues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting DG, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thanks for the opportunity for presenting our annual performance plan to the committee. In summarizing our presentation, Chair, I would just like to mention that there are four critical areas that we considered when preparing our annual performance plan. And these are, one, impact of COVID-19, obviously, and the second one is the relocation of our offices to the Gauteng Industrial Development Zone, the GIDZ, which we expect to happen during the course, later during the course of this year, hopefully. The third one is gaps in our core functions, that is our licensing regime, and lastly, is our declining revenues. The CEO, Cecil Khosa, will articulate these in detail in our annual performance plan. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over to the CEO, Cecil Khosa, to do the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson Ngomezulu. Good morning, Honorable Chair of the PPC, Honorable Members, the Acting DG, Chairperson and Representatives of the various entities of the GMRD. It is an honor for us to present to you the APPN budget of the SAGPMR for the financial year 2021-2022. Chair, we appreciate the opportunity to take you through our mandate, achievements, and the APP, and ending with the budget of the entity and the interventions to the challenges that we identified. As seen on this slide, Chair, it cannot be disputed that the contribution of the diamond and precious metals industry into South Africa's economy is huge. However, the regulator confront the challenge of industry decline over the past few years, which is now exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. The challenge that one has is to ensure that the industry thrives and jobs are created and maintained during these tough times. And at the same time, we need to ensure that financial stability of the organization is maintained. As a Schedule 3A public entity in terms of the PFMA, the SAGPMR was established in terms of Section 3 of the Diamond Act of 1986. And this entity is a non-profit entity which receives a grant from National Treasury, but we are allowed to generate some of our revenue through charging of services or services that are rendered to our clients. Governance oversight is by the board, which reports to the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy. I should mention that our board was appointed with effect from the 1st of November 2021. So by the time they came in, it is important to note that this APP was already prepared by the executive at that time, prior to their appointment. The SAGPMR is a legislatively mandated to regulate the downstream diamond and precious metals industry in the Republic of South Africa. So when we issue licenses or permits, we are mandated to implement the provisions of the mining charter, which promotes transformation imperatives in terms of the limitation of rights as described in the Constitution of South Africa. The Diamond Act is a source from which we are empowered to function, to ensure that the diamond and precious metals of the Republic are exploited and developed in the best interest of the people of South Africa, and to promote sound development of diamond and precious metals undertakings in the Republic. We also implement, administer, and control all matters related to the purchase, sale, beneficiation, import, and export of diamonds and precious metals in the Republic. also provided there a list of precious metals that we are regulating, which is gold, platinum group metals. That group that is listed there, that includes platinum, palladium, ruthenium, rhodium, osmium, and iridium. Now we're going to look at the value chain, starting with diamonds. So once diamonds have been mined, from the mine gate, the production then enters the midstream, where it goes through processes such as sorting, valuing, fading, cutting, polishing, and jewelry manufacturing. This is where the mandate of the regulator resides, the areas highlighted in blue. With regards to precious metals then, the regulator is responsible for regulating the recovery or refining, as well as dental labs, jewelry manufacturing, and beneficiation, which is mainly comprised of the catalytic converters for the automotive industry. I think it's important to note that some people are not even aware that we license the big vehicle manufacturers for use of PGMs in their production of exhaust systems, which mitigate the release of toxic gases into the atmosphere. In terms of what we achieved in the past 5 years, the regulator has managed to achieve continual growth in its targets over the years, issuing a good number of licenses that manage to sustain jobs and to support skills development, trade, local beneficiation, and transformation of the industry. We managed to move the entity from consistently obtaining unqualified audits over 4 consecutive years to obtaining a clean audit in the last financial year. I will not bother you much with the vision and the mission of the regulator. I will move straight to the core business. The function of the regulator is mainly, as I've mentioned, to regulate the precious metals and diamonds industry. However, we are made up of 2 major programs in the core business, namely regulatory compliance as well as diamond trade. The regulatory compliance program is a driver for transformation of the industry, as well as to monitor and enforce compliance legislation, whereas the diamond trade program establishes valuation services and trading platform for the diamond industry. Now, with regard to regulatory compliance, the function deals mainly with ensuring compliance with legislation through inspection and driving the transformation agenda of government through the implementation of the mining charter, as is shown there in the picture. The targets that we've set for ourselves for the coming year, as well as the MTF period. Once more, the issuance of licenses, permits, and certificates is our responsibility, with the aim of creating jobs and skills, as well as value addition of the minerals involved. We therefore strive to improve our efforts despite the challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic, the challenges with budget cuts, and the reduced revenue generation. With regard to diamond trade, this is an area that contributes close to 40% of our internal revenue for the regulator through the charging for services rendered by the GDV, as well as the Diamond Exchange and Export Center. The outcomes of the diamond trade program are job creation, value addition, and compliance with legislation that will be brought about by particularly ensuring that we increase the number of participants in the diamond trade. We now move to support services, which includes finance, corporate services, security, and legal services. On finance, what we have done is to ensure that, in particular on supply chain management, we commit ourselves to improving the target for HDSA participation in procurement year on year, and to develop and maintain systems for it in an effective and efficient financial management environment. corporate services, we aim to develop an effective, efficient, and development-oriented entity through which the following processes and activities can be attained. We have a human development program that ensures that our employees are trained and properly skilled through granting of bursaries to them. We also take pride in our internship program that has seen many young graduates getting professional and sustainable jobs. And some have been absorbed internally and some elsewhere within the industry and beyond. We have a performance management and development system that aligns employee contracts to our mandate so that we can be able to deliver. We also continue to implement a wellness program that safeguards the health of our workers and offers the necessary support and interventions when challenges are identified. Further, in terms of organizational development, we focus on employee recognition, improving organizational culture, and developing young leaders, especially in middle management. And I need to stress that we have a program specifically targeted at young women leaders in that middle management bank. Our ICT services or function is geared towards ushering in a paperless environment for the regulator, whereby applicants will be able to launch applications online without having to physically visit our office. And in the near term, our desire is to develop an online bidding platform for trading in diamonds, which is in line with international best practices. We also continue with our efforts to market the regulator through the various valuable platforms, and we are working very closely with our stakeholders to achieve this, in particular the department, through their program that they are running. On the issues of security and legal services, since we are working on a very security-sensitive environment, that requires us to have our finger on the pulse and implement the necessary security management measures. We continue to protect the regulator from potential and existing litigation by ensuring that all matters are attended to in time, and contracts and other important documents are vetted by industry. And we set 100% target for them. Moving towards our budget, declining market conditions within the industry and the subsequent COVID-19 pandemic has had a negative impact on the revenue of the SADTMR, which raised issues of financial sustainability and questions over the ability to operate as a going concern into the next financial year. However, we managed to obtain National Treasury's approval of a 14 million cash injection through environment. These funds are reinforced for the relocation of the entity to the Southern Industrial Development Zone at OR Tambo International Airport. The date of the occupation at the GIDZ is the 1st of September 2021, and all the necessary processes for relocation are underway. This cash injection of 14 million did not come without condition. We are expected to put in place measures that will address the cost structure that SADTMR should look at reducing the labor cost, which is currently the largest expenditure item of the entity. I should take this opportunity to mention that a number of cost containment measures have already been initiated to reduce or to address this challenge. For instance, we have not had a salary increase for staff for a couple of years now for senior management, and there will also be no increase to staff in general into the future. In terms of budget allocation, this slide shows a grant allocation which, due to annual budget cuts, is not increasing in line with inflation. There is actually a significant increase over the MTEF. I mean, and it's more insignificant actually. projected to grow at a very low rate. Meanwhile, expenditure is projected to grow at a slightly much higher rate compared to the revenue growth. On the budget, taking the budget allocation and contrasting it with the expenditure, you'll see that one is that indeed compensation of employees takes the largest portion of the budget as compared to goods and services. The projection is that compensation of employees will remain constant due to measures being implemented to cap its growth over the MTF period. This next slide is just a summary of what was just discussed under the budget slides above. So I won't bother too much talking about it. So in conclusion, we have looked at how can we manage the challenges raised above that hinged on the four critical areas that the chairperson has raised, such as the impact of COVID-19, the relocation, issues around licensing and declining revenue. So we identified some of these challenges that will require the support of the committee as well as the department if we are to succeed in addressing these challenges. The issue of VAT imposed on the import of goods remains a challenge for the industry. This is made more onerous because large sums of money are kept for long periods as such before they are removed, thus impacting negatively on the cash flow of the business. So our industry will need support in that regard to ensure that there's efficiency in the process. The export levy regime encourages export instead of local beneficiation, especially the precious metals industry. All these challenges require some form of legislative amendment, which may take long to finalize and unlock value in our mineral value chains. We also need to develop and implement our revenue strategy and consistently engage with the department and our stakeholders to ensure that we remain financially viable into the future. Chairperson, we have come to the end of our presentation, and I would like to, through our chairperson, hand over back to the new chair. Thank you.
Thank you, SDO. Chairperson of the board, do you want to make closing comments?
No, thanks, madam.
Thank you so much. That is the presentation, Honorable Chair. We hand it over to you for questions and comments.
The diamond trade, are they back?
Yes,
we are back. Start from where you ended.
Thank you, Chair. Over to you, colleagues.
Thank you very much. Can you see the presentation?
Yeah, it was a bottom.
Thank you very much, sir. Chair, that's where we ended, where we're dealing with the issues of the impact of COVID on the NTT. We have aligned ourselves to the COVID regulations, Chair, and we also conducted a workshop to all the staff in terms of the COVID, and we also dealt with some health issues where we got a service provider dealing with the staff on issues of health COVID, or COVID. Chairperson, we have also indicated earlier that we had no trading and our cash flow was affected by the COVID. And should the situation continue, Chair, the financial position of the entity will not be sustainable, and we will find ourselves not be able to carry the mandate that we have been assigned. The next chapter is about the interventions that I spoke to. I was dealing with midterm, where we spoke about the business plan and the financial mobilization strategy that we have started developing that will go to the board and finalize, and of course we'll interact with the department in such. The long-term chairperson is about basically reviewing the legislation together with the regulator, ensuring that we increase purchase from the local producers. We are discussing the matter with the regulator, checking the producers that have not yet complied, so that we start purchasing from them in terms of the legislation, ensuring that we market the diamonds globally and locally as the state diamond trader, of course, together with other entities that are in the industry chair. We will also put some additional access through buying some products or diamonds from the SADC, so that at least we'll be in a position to assist our clients to get the required diamonds in the industry. Then we'll also continue with our research and development in order to increase the value chain in the diamond sector chain. The next one, Chair, is about the alignment of the state diamond trader APP and the strategy for the next 5 years, as it was approved by the board around December. Chair, we have identified the three issues under the national development plan. There are four outcomes, three outcomes that we have aligned ourselves to. We have also looked at the government priorities. We have also aligned ourselves as an entity to the four priorities of the government priorities, and also looking at the department itself, where we have aligned ourselves to the MTR of the DMRE, which we have about two issues, Chairperson. The summary basically of our APP is more about increasing the current purchase. The last 2 years, Chairperson, we've been purchasing about 2% because the conditions have improved. We are assigned to take about 4 to 5% because of the conditions that we have, and this is also going to be aligned to what the market requires in the country, because we have looked basically for the last 2-3 years, what is it that the market requires. So checking at also the statistics, this is what will be in a position to purchase as a state diamond trader. Will of course increase the number of HDSA that we are selling to as a state diamond trader. Will increase our skills development both internally, and also ensuring that through our EDP and our clients, we assist them in also skills development share, because that will also assist the entity and the country at large. We'll ensure that the non-compliance producers, we start negotiating with them, especially the small the producers. We have already started the process with them, Chair. The compliance with PMFMA and fraud prevention plan that we have, so that we ensure that we have an entity that is capable to deal with all compliance issues that the government has put. To ensure that at the same time, Chairperson, we have a favorable grant or credit facility that we will of course discuss with the department. The next one, Chairperson, is about the review of our business plan. Earlier indicated the review of our EDP, because we felt that for us to have this EDP, it assists us, because the market that we have, or diamond market, is more loaded with one sector, and also an old age people on the market. So the EDP basically deals with the youth. So we are focusing on the EDP that we will continue to do as the state diamond trader. We will cooperate, Chairperson. We have started negotiations with the CSIR and the MinTech in also of developing some research in terms of the Diamond Act and diamond research on development. That will also assist us as the state diamond trader, and also the country at large. And of course, we'll also introduce and promote our annual local diamond show, Chairperson, which we're planning to do this year, but because of COVID, we have kept that in abeyance, but we feel that this is important that we have an annual diamond show, which is an international event that we are planning as the state diamond trader. Chairperson, these are some of the annual performance plans that we have. We have aligned ourselves, Chairperson, to the balance scorecard, which we are looking at the financial perspective, the business perspective, innovative and learning, and customer perspective. So this annual performance plan, Chairperson, has been aligned to the balance scorecard. So basically, we will continue in terms of outcome number one, grow and transform the industry, Chairperson, and we have put all the figures that we think that are critical. The next one, Chairperson, is to contribute in training and skills development. We will continue with our bazaars that we have, training of our staff, and also ensuring that we comply to workplace skills plan and submitting all in terms of the requirements. We will, of course, collaborate, as I indicated, with some institution, research and development institutions to assist the entity. We will also continue, Chairperson, to promote corporate governance, because it's also the key issue for the state diamond trader. There are activities that we have highlighted, Chairperson, in terms of the promotion of the good governance. The other aspect here is to promote the strategic financial support and ensure that this institution or entity becomes financially sustainable. We have put some measures in place, Chairperson, to ensure that we as an institution, we deal with that, and also put issues of the ICT strategy for the entity. Chair, the next slide deals with the challenges. We have dealt with at long about the funding of the entity. I'm not going to elaborate on that. We have another challenge, which the minimization or the production that we have as a country that is declining, that needs attention, because it goes also affecting the entity. Hence, we are in a position to only acquire 4.5% in a year, because there's a decline of the diamonds that we require, or type of diamonds that are required. Our clients, Chairperson, they can't get funding, especially your previous disadvantage, and they are not in a position to acquire more diamonds from outside. Both the government or entities of the government that are dealing with finance, and at the same time commercial banks, are not funding our clients in terms of the diamonds. So the status quo will remain if that era is not attended to, Chair. The legislation I spoke about, that we need to deal with issues of the 10% of rough diamonds that we are purchasing, the 80-20% principle that we need to deal with. My colleague also spoke about the taxation earlier, about the VAT. That is something that needs to be also attended to. The other issue, Chairperson, is about the synthetic diamonds, because in terms of the legislation, as a state diamond trader, we are only allowed to deal with natural rough diamonds, not synthetic diamonds. So if we are going to have more synthetic diamonds on the market, of course, they're going to affect the state diamond trader. Something that as a country needs to be looked at and ensure that there's a balance in terms of the synthetic diamonds that are on the market. Declining production, Chairperson, I spoke about, and the diamond prices that are there, that is a situation that we have to bargain. There's a fair market on transforming. So we need to deal basically about the diamond prices that we have, because the producers basically have upper hand on the state diamond trader in terms of the buying, in terms of the buying. These are activities that we feel, or issues that we feel are critical that we can deal with, or mitigations that we can have on the challenges that I spoke about, Chairperson. It's about collaborating with research and institutions, the incubator, Chairperson, that we are about to establish, to deal with the latest technology, invest in local and international budget, as I indicated, to lobby startup funding for our diamond manufacturing, because most of the countries, Chairperson, they do have funding that is put by government and by commercial banks to ensure that at least there's a diamond manufacturing sector that we need to look into. We will also look at the financial mobilization strategy as the entity. We are also, Chairperson, moving to the OR Tambo on the 1st of September. All the processes are in place, Chair. We feel that this will also assist the entity, but at the same time, our clients in taking advantage of the incentives that are there at the GIG, the Chairperson. We'll also collaborate with other entities to ensure that at least as the country, we have one marketing strategy to market the diamonds both locally and internationally, which we don't have as a country, just something that we need to deal with. There are issues of risk, Chairperson. We have identified these issues to ensure that the strategic outcomes that we have come up with are managed, and we have risk that we have identified, and also the risk mitigation that we have come up with dealing with the financial sustainability of the entity and measures that we have put in place to ensure that as a state diamond trader, we establish a government fund, or we facilitate or lobby for a government fund to be put in place to ensure that at least we are sustainable as an entity, but at the same time, the manufacturing sector for diamonds. The other issue, Chairperson, we have also spoke about HR issues, which deals basically what about institutional memory, if what will happen if we lose intact institutional memory, and the enterprise development project. These are some of the issues that we have looked into and came up with strategies that to revive the enterprise project, to ensure that at least we continue with our bazaaries, continue with our workplaces plan, we continue having a succession plan that will also assist the entity. The other aspect, Chairperson, deals with ensuring that we comply with all the legislation, ensuring that the APP that we have come up with is put in place, ensure that the board also complies with all the issues that are on the board, and also as a state management, ensure that we support the board, which are basically your issues of accountability. So we'll continue dealing with those issues, Chair. The last one, Chair, is about the financial viability and sustainability of the institution, which is very critical, Chairperson. That, of course, will if the situation continues as it is, basically the entity is not going to survive. But at the same time, we have also put some measures in place to ensure that all the risks that we have identified, we are attended to, Chairperson. Chair, I'm now going to request the CFO, through your permission, to deal with the budget, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Chairperson of the Board, and colleagues. Our budget, we have budgeted for increase in the revenue. So our revenue only consists of trust diamonds. And our focus was based on the market condition and the production level from the producers. Based on the improvement that we've noticed in the current year, we have we expecting a slightly or just a marginal increase in revenue with regards to the sales of rough diamonds. Our gross margin percentage will remain stable at 3% over the budget period, and we have increased our operating costs about 5%, and we're trying to maintain the cost containment measures as the CEO has alluded earlier. The finance cost, which is a bit high in 2021, this one will relate to our credit facility if we obtain the approval and we have access to the credit facility. So we have to have paid the raising fee of that particular credit facility and the interest going forward. Hence, we have our finance expense. So that one will be subject to approval. Based on this year and the improvement that we have noticed in the diamond industry, we are expecting to make a minimum profit over the next period. So for 2021-2022, we are expecting to make a profit of 625 and then 22-23 of 276. It's mainly affected by the interest as well if we get access to the credit facility. CEO, if you can move to the next slide. The next one. But the next few slides are just giving us more information with regards to the breakdown of our budget. Next slide, CEO, please. So this one, it relates to sales. As the CEO has alluded earlier, that we are planning to purchase 4.5% of the value of diamonds to be inspected from the producers. And our margin, the gross margin, is expected to be 3%. And the next slide, which is our annual overhead for the next 5 years. So our biggest or our top expenditure is a salary, which is about 60%, but mostly of our staff is the core, which relates to the sale and purchasing of rough diamonds. CEO, we can move to the last slide, which relates to the next one. This one is just showing our cash flow projection for the next five years, and it indicates that if we make the sales, FDT, it will be financial sustainable for the next 5 years. My last slide, it relates to the fixed assets purchases. We'll be moving to the GIDZ. So there are a few assets that we need to replace, and for a few offices that we have to buy the furniture and fittings, and also to replace our old diamond machinery that we use to weigh or to check the color when we sell the diamonds. The total fixed assets will amount to $1 million, which will take place in 2021. That's the last one, CEO, and thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable GM. My last comment is that we are, as a state demonstrator, expecting under the conditions that we are operating, at least that this financial year, we are expecting to have at least a profit. But the question is that going to be sustainable, something that we are looking at, hence we are looking at the financial system and mobilization strategy, because we don't want the situation to be only for this financial aid, but something that we will continue with. But the positive is that at least for this financial aid, we're expecting to make at least a minimum profit. Chairperson, thanks very much, and our apology. We had a technical problem at the office, and we apologize for the challenge that we had earlier. Thanks very much.
Thank you, colleagues. Honorable Chair, that is the presentation from the State Diamond Traders. We hand over to you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. You are the DG now, until the other time. Honorable members, any questions, take? You can deal with both. The reason I put the state diamond trader with the diamond and precious metal regulator is simple because those things sometimes are complementary in the manner that they do. I see the end of Honorable Lorema. I guess that's the only hand we have now. Honorable Lorema, go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Whatever else I've always felt about the state diamond trader, at least used to have the virtue of being financially self-sustaining. That seems no longer the case, or is very in a very risky position. I found slide 15 very disturbing, saying that should the above financial situation continue, then the entity will not be in a position to trade or carry on its mandate. So can you give us some more information about the implications of your getting revolving credit? How important is that in the continuation of your operations? Are you going into debt? By how much? When do you plan to be out of debt? In a wider context, tell us more about the review of the legislation. What, in your opinion, needs to be done to the legislation? And how dependent are you on the new legislation? Are you saying the current model is unable to enable you to be financially sustainable? I'm pleased to hear that at least you said that you think you'll survive this year. When you say you want to increase purchases from local producers, local diamond producers, does that mean that you want the rules changed as to you're getting a bigger percentage of the run of mine? How much, if you want, do you want that increased, do you need? That will make diamond mining less profitable. And have you done any study on the likely bad effects on local mining? At your client base, how many local diamond beneficiators are you dealing with right now? What are the prospects in the short term of that number increasing? And do your largest street clients, your local purchasers, make up more or less than 50% of your local sales? Okay, that's the state diamond trader. Couple of quick ones on the regulator. Your engagement with SARS on the VAT exemption. How far along in that process are you? When do you expect to see results? And then just a comment on export levies, because they will force inefficiencies into production. It's effectively a subsidy by industry for inefficient processing industries. And it will also disincentivize mining. Have you done any studies on the extent of this disincentive? Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay, DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hand over to... Okay.
Yes, Honorable Mashan.
My apologies, Chair. I raised my hand in the middle of comments and questions by Honorable Lorema, and that does not have anything to do with his submission. It's just something that came up when I was looking at my notes. Can I go ahead, Chair?
Okay.
Yeah, to the regulator. It would seem to me many industries were affected negatively by the COVID-19 pandemic. And when we went to the regulator physically, we saw people coming to either deposit or purchase diamonds, whatever the case may be, as the, of course, the pandemic would have affected them in that regard, because I suppose there was a time where they would not take walk-ins and so forth. Have they thought of a possible auction of diamonds in the future? Say, for instance, we live with the pandemic for some time to come. Have they looked at possible ways of managing an online sale that is safe from haircuts and so forth? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, continue, DJ.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll hand over to the State Diamond Trader CEO immediately, to be followed by the regulator CEO. Thank you, Chair. Over to you, colleagues.
Thank you very much, DJ. The first question is around from Honorable Norima, around slide number 15, which basically talks about COVID-19. As our chair, in terms of trading, we are mainly trading with international communities, at the same time local. We, as a state demonstrator, are trading local, but at the end of the day, the clients that we are servicing are trading outside after they've polished, cut and polished the diamonds. So if there's a lockdown like we experienced, because we are dealing with a material that is more precious to people, it's not a something that is like food. So basically, like the situation that we have experienced during lockdown, there was no international trading. Therefore, as a state diamond trader, we couldn't purchase at the same time sell to our clients. Therefore, there was no trading at all. As I indicated, that it affected our financial position, and we had to operate on reserve, especially paying our creditors and also the staff. Therefore, the issue is about, should the situation continue, or we experience the same situation in the near future? That will mean that as a state diamond trader, we will not be in a position to trade, and we won't be in a position to carry our mandate should the situation continue. But I have indicated that for now, the situation has improved. Hence, we are seeing projections that at least we are going to have a profit. But we are praying that the situation continues very well. And at the same time, I indicated that as the board, we have a strategy that we are developing in terms of the reviewing the business plan and also a financial and mobilization strategy, which will ensure that as an entity we continue operate even better going forward. Though currently we are just sustaining the entity from where it's coming from. So that's the situation that we are dealing with in terms of the lockdown, should we have that situation as the state demonstrator. The issue of the revolving credit, because of our financial position and also sometimes the
the purchases that we have to purchase, because some of them, they are big, because the diamonds that are put on the market at that particular time, we don't know the value and also the production for that particular time. Should one producer make a big discovery, as a state diamond trader, we don't have enough funds to purchase those diamonds. So the revolving credit was there. It's an agreement that we had with the ITC, and also where we are in a position to get that part and purchase, and we pay back to the ITC. Currently, we don't have that instrument. Hence, some of the production that we receive are made possible by the producers. We cannot be in a position to deal with it because of our financial position, especially for the big production that is put on the table. The issue of the reduced, there are a number of issues. We have a study that was done internally, and which was still continuing discussing with the regulator the issue of legislation. There are a number of issues that we have discovered. The issue of the 10% runoff to the entity itself, it doesn't assist the entity, and that we are not getting since the inception of the entity. We never got any funding from the entity, and we are basically operating on both as a commercial and a social entity. Hence, we require that basically what we are going to produce, put in place is to look into a legislation looking basically the 10%, whether is it practical for the entity or not, the run of mine. We are also talking about the 80-20% principle that is there, looking at both the what is happening international and what's happening local. Is that competitive enough for us to continue in that? The regulator also indicated the issues of VAT that is there, whether is it assisting the entity, and we're also talking about the legislation that is there, whether in terms of the regulator, ourselves, and the SARS, whether are we talking the same language? So again, legislation that need to be reviewed for on all these the entities so that it can assist the entity going forward. That's the issues of legislation review. So we have done the study. We are discussing it basically with the regulator. I will consolidate everything and submit to the DMR. Then they will look at what is it that we are putting into the table for the country. Currently, we have about 14 producers that we are basically buying. We have got the steps from the regulator, also from the department, looking at all the producers that we have in the country. Our aim is to ensure that all the producers in the country, as per the legislation, they must also give the 10% runoff to the state diamond trader. Should that situation happen, and we know that at least our finances will improve. So hence, we are also pushing for that, because it will assist as a state diamond trader to increase our profit, and our finances should increase, Jefferson. For local beneficiaries, there was a question about how many beneficiaries we have. Currently, we have about 78 clients as a state diamond trader, and those clients, we have segmented them to ensure to check which client is falling in which category. But basically, we have about 78 clients that we are dealing with. Chairperson, if you don't mind, I would request maybe if my colleague, a special operations manager, wants to add something, or the CFO wants to add something on the finances, through your permission, Chairperson.
Thank you, CEO. I think just on the basis of, yes, we've got 78 clients. Impact of COVID, I think, like CEO has indicated in the early stages of the presentation, the impact on those small to medium black-owned companies, impact of their cash flow, which put them at a disadvantage to actually buy diamonds. Yes, and our top five clients basically contribute about 50% of our purchases, our sales to them. Just to reiterate, it is about ensuring that those producers that are not compliant become compliant in showing state arbitrator their production, which means we'll have more access to more goods, 10%, up to 10% of those goods, which means we will have more lab available for the clients, which in turn will bring more revenue to state arbitrator. Thank you, CEO.
Therefore, are you fine?
Yes, thank you, Frank.
Thank you very much, Gigi, and the chairperson.
May I come in?
Gigi, may I respond?
Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you, DG. I'll start on the question that was raised by Honorable Lorima regarding engagement with staff on the issues around VAT. I think if I can just clarify what the challenge is with VAT. There's two issues around VAT. The first issue is the levy itself, and the other issue involves VAT refunds. So, there's been a lot of submission from industry in the past to say that the VAT on import is actually hampering on their business development, and they would like that to be waived. And a lot of reasons were advanced to that effect, and submissions were made to SARS. On record, I have two submissions that were made to SARS, and engagements were held, but there's not been much progress made in that regard. And then in around 2018, if I recall well, we proceeded again to engage SARS on those issues. And lately, we had meetings with SARS to discuss the issue. Last week, we wrote a letter to SARS expressing the issues around VAT and VAT refunds. On the issue of VAT refunds, there are cases where our clients would wait for a few months to get their monies returned, and that impacts very gravely on their cash flows, because 15% of a few million rand is a lot of money. So it's impacting them very, very seriously. But we are, on an ongoing basis, engaging with SARS to that effect, and SARS is also coming on board to assist. On the second question around export levies, whether there's any studies done, the regulator embarked on a process of benchmarking with our counterparts around the world. In particular, I can quote Russia, Botswana, and Angola, some examples where we did benchmarking on the export-import regime, and there was a lot of lessons learned. To say that from their side, what they do, they try to encourage local beneficiation and encourage imports into their jurisdictions for local beneficiation in terms of their legislation. And Honorable Lorima, you will recall that in South Africa, before the amendment of the Diamonds Act, the export levy was 15% that was charged at that time. When the amendment was done, that amount was reduced to 5%. And then we saw an outflow of diamonds in rough form because of that legislative change, because clients feel that they can fetch a better price at a lower levy. So that has actually had an impact on that. So we are continuously looking at various jurisdictions in terms of how they do it and how best can we learn from our partners elsewhere. On the issue raised by Honorable Masaule around industry impacted by COVID-19, and what are the possible actions we are taking to ensure that there's an online auction for the future. I can say that we have what we call a web admin system, which has different modules for licensing, for GDV, for inspectorate, and for Diamond Exchange and Export Center. So this electronic system is an integrated system that looks at integrating the activities that are taking place within the entity. And provision is made for expanding the module under the Export Center to include online bidding. We have embarked on a development of apps for online application. However, we are being careful in terms of how we're doing this. We're trying to do this gradually, not to overwhelm the system. We are upgrading our infrastructure as we move into the GIDZ so that our clients can actually have real-time information when they interact with us. Another advantage now is that South Africa now has data centers for cloud technology that will assist us in actually improving our systems in that regard. I hope I've answered the question.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Over to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Acting DG. And thanks for the presentations also that you have made as the department through its entities. I will leave some of the issues for now, but I think most definitely this thing of the APPs and the budget will require a thorough discussion even outside the normal procedures of Parliament. Scrutinize each and every matter that emerges. I could see also that it's going to be very tough for you as a department. I don't want to mention names so that in case I may offend. But on the true presentation, there was one that I think it was almost close, precise to the point, and dealing with directly with the item concerned. But I can see it's going to take time for most of us to understand the purpose of this exercise, especially making us understand the key priorities, so that we can be able to measure people according to those priorities. But I hope with time we're going to improve. But let me appreciate the presentations that have been made. It's now left up to the committee to deal with all the presentations and then make recommendations based on the observation that would have been made by the committee. So we will deal with that. Thank you very much, honorable members, the department and its entities. We have come to the end of these presentations and hope to meet next week. And again, my apologies that on a Friday, probably you should be enjoying yourself somewhat. But let me appreciate your dedication in dealing with the issues that are very pertinent and in demand from us. The meeting is adjourned until next week.
Sorry, Chair, before you close, can you please stay behind at the support desk?
Fine.
Thank you,
Lento yenu yokuloku nisiseba nochena. You want to be part of management, Ms. Malinda?
Okay, bye. Bye-bye.